Okay, so my next question is, what to look out for in an organization before applying for a job?
Make sure they like you.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the sixth episode of our Late for Stand-Up podcast. This episode is a continuation of our previous episode where we talked about product design with Benny McCarchy and UX Derek. Let's get to it.
What's the name of the podcast again?
Everyone Lies at Stand Up.
I know getting your very first software development job can really be overwhelming. So
I'm a human being first.
Exactly. Potential is this is a gamble.
They assume because it has worked at Silicon Valley, it's going to work at Kaswa.
Most people need to know when to make a phone call and when to send a text message.
What I fear the most in my career is for me to be not worth my years of experience.
Yeah, but I found the job before I left, so don't let Safa do it.
The point I'm trying to make is that if it's a very first job, money shouldn't be the primary focus because you most likely won't be earning a lot.
Okay, so my next question is, what to look out for in an organization before applying for a job?
Make sure they like you.
You know the funny thing? It's like, I'm here expecting answers to certain questions to go a certain way, but then you just drop it and it's like, nah, I didn't expect that.
But yeah, I think if you go to a team that really respects you and like you as a person or like your work, it's very easy to grow there, because the time that you spend hating on somebody or complaining about your manager, your teammates, that time you can be able to upskill. So first, go to a team that actually likes you or respects your work. Go to a team that has structure. I think this might be difficult for people who join startups, because startups don't really have that structure. It's more of, we need to build this by next week. Okay, let's do this. So it might be difficult for people joining startups, but then look for some sort of structure. As in, you know the work you are going to do, you know how you're going to contribute to the product. Go to a team that would allow you to grow. So ask them, what structures do they have in place for upscaling, for growth and all that? Because right, I'm going to brag about my team again.
Okay.
we have upscaling and peer design like sessions that you learn what another designer is doing. You join their stand-ups. All of us have different stand-ups, so you join their stand-up, learn what they are doing, and it helps. So join a team that allows you to grow. Join a team that doesn't treat you like a slave.
Okay.
You can't be a product designer and then the next time they're asking you to it's okay.
Please drag them. Call out this bad behavior.
Shot fired.
And then I think one thing that is really important, ask about the relationship between the design team and the PMs. And make sure the PM is correct. Yeah, Benita, you can go else. Yeah. So that's what I think. How about you?
Well, I would say, you know the thing I said about research? I will research every little bit of this organization. I will go on Glassdoor. I will go to Twitter and type in the organization, because it's very important to me that, you know, I'm joining. Sometimes we're so desperate for a job that we forget that we're actually going to work at that job. We're going to work in an environment with, you know.
It's not just about money.
Exactly. And with most people wanting more remote or international jobs, they forget the basic needs, you know, that can help them as designers, and, you know, mentally as well. So I do my research very well. I'm particular about organizations that prioritize work-life balance, because I don't want you messaging me, you know, at questionable times to say work on this. I'm very strict on that. Work-life balance is important to me. So as organizations are interviewing me, I interview them as well. Like, these things are key to me, so I need these questions to be answered if I'm going to be a part of your team. I'm also huge on organizations that are, you know, that are big on innovation and have an ethical perspective to design. You know, that's important to me. What are the measures that they have in place for upskilling? How well do you compensate your talent? Because I have bills to pay. I'm very particular. How well do you compensate your talent? I'm a realist. I have bills to pay. So, you know, my work, my pay has to reflect the amount of value that I contribute.
You need to chill.
Yes. And I like environments that empower their employees to do things outside of the organization, you know. And I will point out Microsoft here, because their CEO said this thing where he said, use Microsoft as a platform to pursue your passions. Someone like me, I'm multidimensional. Today's fashion, tomorrow is this, you know, while product design is what I do for a living, you know, I still have other interests that I like to explore. And it's good to know that, you know, your organization is able to empower you through that. You know, so definitely compensation, work-life balance. What is the culture within your design team? You know, what's the design leadership within that team like? I pay attention to those things. So it's not that as you talk the talk to me, I want to come in and see that you walk the talk. So, yeah.
All right.
I think people don't really interview the company back.
Yeah,
they just go into an interview and just answer questions mm-hmm. and do not find out what exactly happens in the company. I think desperation.
Yeah,
maybe they forget. But
yeah, and in my experience, I find that, you know, it interests them when you do that. You know, it sparks conversation, and, you know, it just. I find that they like having conversations around that, at least the ones that are not toxic. So that's another way to spot the toxic ones. If they don't want to talk about it, run away. Anyway, but yeah.
Yeah, but speaking about interviews, how are your interviews like? How are they like?
Mine was, I think, a 4 or 5 stage interview.
Wow. That's packed.
So the first one I met was the director of UX. So I met Sarah. Then after Sarah, I did a small challenge. And then I met 2 senior members of the team. So after that, I went back to Sarah. Then I think the last person I met was the marketing manager. He was in Ghana at that time, so we went for lunch, and then we had that conversation too there. So yeah, that was my interview process. I'm not sure if that's the normal, but yeah. But I think it's similar in a lot of companies that a lot of people are trying to adopt the processes that are used in the bigger tech firms, so Google. And some people have at least 7-8 design interview stages. You go to on site, you go and do that. Like, it's fun if you know what you are doing. It's fun.
Yeah, so Benny, how is a product design interview like? What are your thoughts based on your experiences?
Okay, so I'll say it's been a bit different for me, in the sense that most times relationships and previous work is what gets me my foot in the door. Because as a transitioner, I transitioned through a bootcamp program, and the people who were in charge of the bootcamp program, the bootcamp was done in partnership with World Bank and Equals. So I was absorbed to intern with the company after that. And then I grew from intern to where I am now, you know. And then outside of that, I have done like freelance jobs. So I have my freelance clients who I work with, and most of those come from, you know, recommendation or word of mouth, or Benny should, this is what she's done, I trust her to do a good job, here we go. So I haven't really had what you would call the typical tech interview process, but that's something I'm looking forward to. I hope that my employers are not listening to me, but I only want to leave us around. But
well, I don't think that necessarily means you want to leave, but it's actually quite nice and okay for you to have that experience, right?
Exactly.
Because I feel like once in a while, there are some people who like to interview for other companies, not necessarily because they want to leave, but it's also necessary to keep in touch with how the process is so that you don't get too lost.
Mm-hmm.
So once in a while, you need to remind
yourself. I agree. I agree. I remember when I worked with one freelance client, and he had a proper interview because they wanted to work on their startup, and they wanted to work on a yoga platform. You know, okay. Personally, I love yoga, and so we got up on that while I was during the interview when I presented the portfolio presentation part of interviews. You know, they go to my wireframe and like, okay, that's fine, we'll work with you. You know, so I've not really had the 7-5-step interview kind of process. But again, I don't think I will do a 7-step interview. I think that is too much. Four is enough for you to Google. Okay, let's just say minus the FANG and MANG, you know. But I think, honestly, I think that four interviews is enough for you to know if you want to work with the person or not. So I will not do 7. I don't see myself doing that.
I think, that's cool. That's really cool.
I think what I gather here is that depending on how fun or interactive the stages are, it can ginger you to carry on.
I was actually designing an app to help interplanetary travel. So an app like Uber for spaceships. It was fun.
Maybe Elon would buy that app.
It was fun because it was far away from what I was used to. I had to read about new stuff, and I enjoyed the process because it wasn't the normal design a fintech app or design this, but about spaceships and stuff. It was really cool. So yeah, the process might be really nice and it might cause you to continue.
So my next question will be, how do you protect your mental health as a product designer?
What is mental health?
Oh my goodness.
Benita,
So, okay. Generally, I'm so into wellness and I'm so into fitness. It's something that is priority to me. I always make time and find time for it consistently. So again, I mentioned yoga before. Yoga is my happy place. You know, when everything is chaotic when everything that you think cannot go wrong have possibly gone wrong. Yoga is what centers me, you know. I also find that working out helps me a lot, especially with like pent up stress, because working as a product designer, you're constantly interacting with different personalities from different parts of life, from different industries, right? So depending on a stakeholder or stakeholders, you might find yourself expensing more than just your required skill, and it can really go a long way to affect your relationship with yourself if care is not taken. So I make it a point that I must work out at least 4 times a week, nothing less.
Wow.
You know, and I do that. So it's a mix of yoga, it's a mix of dance, fitness. I have a really good wellness community, and that is a positive for me. So I'll say fitness and wellness is one. Okay, so secondly, I like to go out. You know, I make the time to go out and have some fun. So where good music is playing, where you have a good crowd, it's also a good way to network or to just, you know, taking people watch and taking other aspects of humanity. So those are the ways that I recharge. I also, these days I find it hard to watch movies. So I honestly can't remember the last time I sat down to watch a movie. I'm not really to be honest, you know. So yeah, that and reading. I also enjoy tea. You will find me exploring different flavors of tea, as ridiculous as that sounds. Yes, as ridiculous as that sounds, it makes me happy.
Wow, so many tastes.
Yes,
is that where you get your inspiration from?
maybe. But yeah.
Oh, the only tea I know is Milo. Yeah, but I think lately mental health among people in tech has become like a very important issue. I think first people believe in working until you burn out, and then that's what signifies hard work. But right now, I try to sleep whenever I can. I've limited galaxy. I've limited galaxy a lot. The money is not worth hospital trips and stuff. Yeah.
You just brought in a term that not all of us might understand.
Oh. Benita, do you know what galaxy is? I think she's off.
I think you lost her again.
Yeah. So for those listening, galamsey is where you do work outside your 9-to-5, usually as a freelancer, or I think some people do 9-to-5 galamsey. Yeah. Like they have 2 9-to-5s. Yeah.
So what, working with a company that is like 7 hours ahead?
You go to stand up when you're about to sleep. But yeah, like cutting all that, if you want to chase money, you would ignore a lot of stuff that's got to do with your health. And yeah, I don't think it's all worth it.
Let's try and connect Benny back.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back.
Hi.
Hello.
We kind of drifted a bit and we're talking about galaxy.
Oh, Milo.
No, not Milo. Galaxy. It's a term in Ghana.
The last thing I heard was when he said it. I didn't hear that much. The last thing I heard from Derek was the only tea he knows is Milo. That's where I lost the sound.
Yeah, so
that's where I lost
so I was saying to like protect my headspace or my mental health, I try to limit galamsey work. And galamsey is when you do work outside your 9 to 5. So a lot of governments, mm-hmm. governments under G work. So
but what I've realized is that it's actually quite common among product designers. You have them working on like 2 or 3 what? Projects concurrently. And why is that the case?
Again, it varies from go on.
So it's very difficult to recruit product designers, at least from what I understand, because it's easy to design or redesign Facebook's landing page. It's easy to redesign Jumia's landing page and put it to your portfolio. It's easy to do all of that because you don't have stakeholders that change requirements. You don't have engineers that are telling you, oh, this is not possible, let's do it this way, or the API is not bringing this information, so you have to do it on another screen. Like, you don't have that box. So it's a different game to design in a team and for clients than you just doing for your portfolio, right?
So there are a lot of intangibles which you can't just get from practicing.
Exactly. And it becomes stressful to the stakeholder, right? Because the stakeholder is not hiring you for your design process. Like, they don't care about your design process. Your stakeholder doesn't care mm-hmm. about whether you use dark mode or light mode in your VS Code. Yeah, at the end of the day, it's the app working. It's the app working. So the reason why a lot of product designers will work multiple is because a stakeholder has seen that Derek has worked on this app and this app is working. So rather than gamble on another product designer, I'll just go for somebody who I've seen do this thing, right? So some CEOs who intentionally go to some companies' LinkedIn profile and see their designers and just DM them that, oh, I've seen the nice work you are doing here, can you help me build my product?
Okay.
So you realize that sometimes in over a year, you don't even touch your portfolio mm-hmm. because your company alone is
your portfolio.
Yes. So that's why, in my opinion, I think a lot of designers who are employed are doing other work. But then, if you want to protect your mental health, I would appeal to a lot of designers to limit.
Well, that being said, how do beginners break in?
Benita, relax. How do beginners break? Oh, okay.
I would love to take that because oh my goodness, it's insane. I'm speaking from a transition perspective, you know, because again, I didn't have a product design background either in school or my other professional roles. But what helps is that when you're transitioning, you always want to find transferable skills. So, for instance, I already had skills around, you know, sales and advertising. So when you're transitioning, you definitely want to look at the transferable skills that you have. In my own case, I'd worked in sales and advertising PR. So I was constantly talking to people within those roles, empathizing with them, you know, liaising between stakeholders and customers, you know. So those are skills that I still apply every day to product design. So you first want to find out if this skill, you have transferable skills that will work for you, because when you don't have the experience, that skill will speak for you in most cases. Yeah. And then I will say, start building relationships. If you don't already have, start building relationships and make sure that your relationship is not opportunistic, you know, because it's easy for you. Some people like when you hit them straight up, you know, this is what I want, you know, I want advice on this, or do you, is there any opportunity you feel that I can explore? Other people find that annoying or irritating, so you want to get the person's personality and know how to go about it. But relationships definitely help. As soon as I started the bootcamp program, I already was looking for internship opportunities, so I didn't wait to finish.
Yeah.
Because I love the job, like through projects. I didn't know on Twitter, I was everywhere because I just wanted, you know, the opportunity to be within an organization and actually experience what it is like to work as a product designer where there are constraints and limitations, like, you know, realistic things that will happen when you're working with business objectives in mind. So, yeah, I would say do that, you know, because... And then realize that everybody's journey is different.
Mm.
Everybody's journey is different. There are people who we started together and they're way ahead of me. There are people who started together and they still haven't gotten an internship. You know, so just be consistent, do what works for you. But I will say, if you want to break in as a new as a new designer, especially if you have transitioned, you want to build relationship, you want to start asking for opportunities even before you finish your bootcamp. That's what worked for me in my case. So, yeah.
All right. Speaking about skills, what are some no-brainer skills every designer should have? I like this.
Communication. do you want to go first, Derek?
Yeah, so you will find yourself always explaining your work or yourself, and you need to be ready to break down concepts to people at a moment's notice, because your product, okay, so you are not going to be in the room anytime your product is being talked about, right? So you might not know the conclusion people have drawn in their minds already before coming to you. So you should be able to, so like Benita said, communication, you be able to break down concepts, get people to understand you in as few words as possible. Stakeholder management, because as a designer, you don't work alone. And your stakeholders are not only your bosses, your devs are your stakeholders, your teammates are your stakeholders. Anybody that's the product concerns is a stakeholder, so you need to take all their views into consideration, manage them. You don't just turn up into a meeting and like you are the boss of, because you designed it, everybody has to just take what you say as gospel. You can't do that. So you need to manage stakeholder expectations and all that. What else? Basic design principles. I think that will take you very far. There are some things that are not solved with complex product design techniques. You can just change the color of something to black or to white and it fixes the problem, and you just have to go. So those are things I think should be a given. And you should get used to people critiquing your work, even if you didn't ask for it. Even if you didn't ask for it. Because I worked on a project once where everything was done. I went through the documentation. I made sure everything was on point. And then there was a feature that the stakeholders wanted to postpone to version 2. They didn't want to release the version 1. So I made a duplicate and then took that feature out. Now somebody else came into the file and was like, where is this thing? Like, where's this feature? Why didn't you bring it? I don't like my work like this. All like lots of complaints. But then all he needed to do was ask, and then it was okay. This is a duplicate for version 1, version 2. And the person went on a whole rant, and I was there. So you should just make sure like you are always in the mood to explain your work. You meet some annoying stakeholders. It's normal. Everybody thinks they know your job. Yeah. Everybody thinks they know your job. But then you also have to understand that everybody wants, because you are like the first point of contact, and everybody wants their job to be easy. So they'll try as much as possible to contribute to your job as much as possible. So listen to everybody, learn to listen to everybody, and then take their feedback. But then, yeah, it's the game is the game. Everybody will think they can do your job.
Not bad.
Penny, what do you think?
I will say it might sound like a broken record for communication. And communication is, in this sense, is not one-dimensional.
Yeah.
You being able to listen to people is you communicating. You being able to take feedback is communication. So when I say communication, I don't necessarily mean that, you know, it's just you talking, but it's also the way that you listen, take feedback, and implement on it. It's also the way that you are confident enough to, you know, present your design decisions and sometimes advocate for important features or things that shouldn't be taken out of the experience or of a flow, you know. So definitely communication is an important role. You also need to be able to, it's important to be able to remove yourself from your work. You are not your work, right? So when someone says, oh, this design can be better, or here's what we need to do, It doesn't take away from you as a designer.
Yeah.
Your competence is still there, your capacity is still there. But again, collaboration plays a huge part in, you know, bringing forth a successful product to the market. So collaboration is important as well.
Feedback is not a personal attack.
Feedback isn't a personal attack.
Even though sometimes I feel like, you know, can we work on this? No, I don't want you on my design file, but yeah, things like that. So I will definitely say those. And lastly, I'd say it's important to be teachable, you know, because again, I like design from an inclusive point of view. So everybody in that room has something that you can take away from them. And there's you can't downplay the importance of diverse perspective on things, because again, users are different. 10 people could use a product, but they'll use it in different ways, right? So it's important for you to be teachable and to value opinions that are different from yours, whether it's cultural or at least listen to it, you know. So yeah.
I used to get pissed when PMs come to me with wireframes, but then after a while, I was like, this just makes my work easier. Let me just, yeah, because they end up sometimes understanding their projects better than you. So when you get a PM, that's maybe they have some idea around design and all that. It makes your work. So I just kept quiet and I'm like, oh yeah, sure. I have wireframe to share with you. Oh, cool. Bring it.
Yeah, but how is collaboration like? Because oftentimes on a project, you only have one product designer. And if a few meetings I've seen between like different product designers, I wouldn't say they tend to fight a lot, but it's as if one person is saying they want to do things this way and the other is saying, no, we should do it this way. I think this is better. And they end up critiquing each other. So how does it work? Do you get to collaborate with each other? And maybe what's the reason why you would usually have only one product designer? Because you can take a big project, right, and you might have like 5 back-end developers, 4 front-end guys, 3 mobile guys, 1 product designer.
overload.
I think it's perspective, because a lot of people see the design side to be very easy, right? Sometimes it's a lot of work. Sometimes a lot of work, but then they're like, yeah, it's just interface, or you are just designing the screen, and then they bring only one designer. But then, like, as you are saying, the back end will be like five guys. I think it's just perception, because sometimes two or three designers working on a project will make it much better than just one designer working on it. And the different views that the designers have will help make the product better. Because if I'm making decisions, I'm making it from just my point of view, regardless of the amount of research I've done or studies or what, it's still what I've learned from the research that I'm going to put in the product, right? But then if multiple designers are working on the product, you can get different points of views, even though like the data is bringing the same thing. So yeah, I think it's just a perception problem. And that's in a lot of African companies too. You get huge companies with 20, 30 developers, and then you go to the design team and there's just one small guy sitting there. Yeah. And it brings a lot of pressure to the designers.
I can Benny, go what to, do you think?
I think, is she still there? Oh, okay.
Yes, I am.
But I can go to some startups outside, very small startups, and they have two designers, three designers. But I come to Ghana here, a big company, one designer. Any down guy is part time.
So is it that they're not valued enough, or they don't really see their essence? Because I assume you put more, I don't want to call people resources, but I assume you put more effort into things that you value a lot. And it's quite counterintuitive, because designers are responsible for the entire experience. How users are going to view the app, the continuity of the app, why people want to download it, first impressions, things like that. So then it's really odd to think that companies won't want to invest a lot into them and would only have like one per project.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me take it from the collaboration, right? I think one of the things that I enjoy as a designer is brainstorming and sprint, because they're just, you know, fantastic ideas that you didn't remotely think of, and then this person has brought about it, or you know, has a different spin to an idea that you have. It's beautiful. So collaboration is something that I enjoy within the product design space. And when opinions differ, I think what can bring it together is the goal, because at the end of the day, you both are working, or 20 of you are working at the same goal. You know, company culture also plays a part. You know, how do you guys interact with yourselves within a team? What is the company way of you know, interacting with each other? So things like this play part. Now, as for five back end, front end versus one product designer, this is what we keep advocating for as designers. At least I find myself doing that, you know, trying to let people know design is important to your business. And sometimes it takes you showing them a bad design and how much it will cost their business for them to be able to see. So when you explain it, you don't explain it from a part of, okay, I need to do this because it's part of my process or something that I have to do. Explain it to them so that they can see the value that it puts to their business. This is what you would lose, right? And this is how much more you could be making. Now, how much more impact, how much more value, how much more money you could be making. you know, so when you put it to them like that, they're able to, you know, better understand it. But I think that design is still a relatively new field, not because it hasn't been in existence, but because we're coming, like, people are now recognizing more the importance of design, you know, as opposed to when they think about product, they just think about, okay, it's people who are going to implement or build it.
The Zoom ended.
Yeah.
Okay, Benny, welcome back again. Yeah, so what was the last thing you said?
Oh my god, can I remember? I think we had just talked about collaboration and, you know, five back-end developers as opposed to one designer. And I finished my thought on that. I was done.
Okay. Yeah, I think UX Derek actually agreed with what he said.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was saying different stakeholders would care about different things in the product, and you have to speak their language, right? Because you can't just go to a CEO and tell him that, or tell her that the design you are proposing is the best because it looks good. You have to give them a reason better than it looks good. Maybe it will drive better engagement, to convert more people. The devs will also want to hear a different thing, not just, oh, let's force and implement this animation. Like, you need to give them a reason, else they won't be keen on doing it, you know, regardless of what you think, and they might do a shoddy work for you.
Yeah.
Trust me, they can be shady.
From your laughter, it's like both of you really have a lot of experiences dealing and being in positions like this. It's like because I feel like there's more you want to say, but then you just laugh.
Oh yeah, you meet a lot of these kind of stakeholders.
We understand it. It's like, I joke.
Yeah, you meet a lot of these stakeholders, especially if you are doing some freelance work, because a lot of the time freelance work doesn't have much structure, and you meet a lot of these kind of people. So yeah, it's something that you have to get used to.
Yeah. I'm sure our listeners can learn a lot from that. Okay, then for my next question, at what point should a beginner start looking for a job or an internship? Who's gonna take that first?
Come again with the question.
At what point should a beginner start looking for a job or an internship?
Oh, immediately you can design stuff.
No, but is there a level or a skill or something you need to know before you can get a job?
You should be ready to learn, right? When you are hired as a junior designer, everybody knows that you are not good at the job. Like, your seniors will know that. That by then, they appreciate the fact that you are willing to learn. They appreciate the fact that you are not lazy or you always want to be better than you currently are. That's what seniors look out for when they are looking for juniors, not who is the best designer, because they know your skill set is not up to where they are. So they'll rather look for somebody who is willing to learn than somebody who shows them flashy stuff all the time. Right, so once you grasp the basic concept, just look out for internship, junior roles. And this thing, a lot of new designers are corporate of this. They end up focusing on remote roles than normal in-house role. It's more difficult to get a junior role remote than in-house, because in-house you can be supervised and all that, but then for remote, you're in your corner and then do some design and submit and all that.
Yeah, and not to interrupt, but with remote roles, do you really get the opportunity to interact with users? So let's say you're a product designer for a company in Germany, right? And you're building an app for a school. You might want to interview a few students, but you're in Ghana. So right away, it's like you miss out on the whole UX process. So are there some downsides to that? Or maybe there are some ways to overcome that, like maybe Zoom calls with people?
Yeah, so the same way UX process is not the same, you said, even Benita's design process is a bit different from mine. So same thing with research and all that. If you want to talk to someone outside, like on Zoom, maybe use data analytics tools, Mixpanel, Google Analytics, and to track data, or you send out questionnaires to people, or you ask people to screen record their screens whilst going through a certain flow and all that. So they are definitely, it makes it more difficult than in person, but then we are in 2022. There are ways to like go around some of these things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with what he said. You know, if you're working within a small team where you are the sole designer, you definitely want to explore virtual ways to get user insight, but sometimes you're working as the UX designer, UI UX, and then there's the researcher. So the researchers do that and then give you the results, you know, or send their findings to you, and then you can build up on that. But as a designer, I mean, as a digital product designer, explore those tools. Explore those tools to get your user insight, you know. I think that's it.
Yeah, speaking about research, you people do a lot of research. Do you ever consider writing academic papers or things like that?
Your calendar will not allow you to write anything. Well, yeah, sometimes when you solve a designers, problem. Okay, go on.
I think we hear each other after a while. That's fine.
Yeah, it's a lag. Yeah. All right. So sometimes I think when you're in a team, it's not all the time that you might have to write a case study for the problem. That's, let's say, your company, you solve a problem, it's not necessary. The PM has already drafted a doc and you also added your process and all that. But then, let's say you are using the Twitter app and then you encounter an issue and then you solve it with design. Yes, I've seen a lot of people write case studies for such things. And I've seen some design teams in companies. So a team like Spotify design team has their own website. They have their own Twitter handle that they post things from time to time. I know other design teams do that. Google design team, I think IBM, they try to put content out to the community. So some teams do it, but unless maybe you are doing it for your personal projects or you want to educate people on some things, then yeah, but it's been a long time I've written a case study.
I'll say that most designers, or maybe let me not generalize, I tend to find please that some designers do not like to write. That's the reason why a bunch of us do not have portfolios, you know, because
yes,
to sit well, down and ask me that, you know, I think I'm putting together, it's like, oh my goodness, I already have the the you know, products I've worked on. But I miss the days when, you know, mostly what you had to do was be competent at your job. But nowadays it feels like you have to spread yourself to a lot of be, you know, good in the sense that you're learning and then you're giving back. It's also important to note how you want to be able to give back and what you want to be able to explore, right? Like, I love writing leisurely. Once you tell me to write for, once it's a task-oriented kind of writing, I'm going to do it, but it's not something that I would love. But if I were writing about that topic leisurely, because I just feel the need or the knack to do it, then it's fine, right? Now, when it comes to learning, giving back, and exploring design or sharing knowledge, I prefer to do that just as we're doing now through podcasts. And I also, you know, at work, we have interns, you know, and you have to teach them, take them through UX processes, take them through UI design. So that is me actually sharing the knowledge that I have gained so far. And I volunteer from time to time to take like students who were at home, like during the recently ended ASUU strike. You know, I had like a batch of 14 students who went through that for weeks. Yeah, so just because I'm not writing on Medium doesn't mean that I'm not sharing knowledge or interacting. You just have to pick and choose. And sometimes I just want to be a banana after work. Like, work is already a lot. I don't want to spread myself too thin, you know. Just let me be a banana and that's fine. Yeah. But bananas get eaten. So
I think the best designers, this might be not true for everyone, but then the best designers rarely update their portfolio. Because the number of designers I've seen who are always working, and then you ask them for their portfolio and they're like, Charlie, I don't know where it is. Like, I know a friend who his portfolio, he hasn't updated it in a while, but he's always getting work to do. He's always getting gigs to do, and he doesn't touch his portfolio. So, yeah, I think spend a lot of time bettering your task, right? A portfolio can be there as probably your legacy project that you use to teach people. But like we said earlier, at the end of the day, the users don't really care how something was filled. You have to push yourself to do the right thing. Yeah.
Yeah. What two things do you love about designing?
What
two things do you love about designing?
Oh, I'd have to think about this one. Benita.
I feel like you just threw me under the bus, but okay. Okay, so I will first say that what I love interacting with people. I enjoy it, you know. So I find that design puts me in that space where I'm constantly interacting with people. I can use my creative and problem solving skills together, and I still do it within that interaction with people. So I love that. I also like that. what my train of thought just traveled for for a while now. But let's see, what else do I love about design? I love that I can see the impact of my work in real time, you know, especially because I worked on some socially committed projects across health, across governance, you know, and I can see the impact in real time. The contributions we've made, I can see how it impacted people, positive outcomes to communities, you know, whether it's upskill, helping people upskill, you know. I just love that I can see that in real time, and I can measure to an extent how much impact or how much what I do in my day-to-day role aligns with my belief as a person. So I like that.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. Watching your work make impact. Let's say you redesigned a feature on a product, and then all of a sudden your mix panel shows you a spike in the engagement, and you're like, oh, nice. I did this.
I did that.
Yeah, I think that's one fun part about it. I think, yeah, another thing I enjoy, like, getting people, let users writing feedback to user support or customer support, telling them how they enjoyed using a product. And then customer support sends you an email with the screenshots. And you're like, oh.
That was all me.
But yeah, I think you tend to learn a lot in product design, because I've worked on products in health, insurance, fintech, e-commerce, and you have to learn new things all the time, and it's quite exciting. It's quite exciting because you realize that things that you thought were certain way are not how you thought. So like in e-commerce, you have to learn about how the riders deliver their product, how the vendors interact with the product. So by the time you realize you are qualified enough to start your own business, because you end up learning a lot from different user groups or users or stakeholders. So I think that's one thing I love about my job, that I don't need to just learn one thing to grow. I can learn a lot of things, and that will contribute to my experience. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Last question. Ooh. What do you think is the future for product design?
The future for product design. Oh, the future is bright. I think as time goes on, we are going to have to create more intuitive experience, because as time goes on, technology becomes more and more complex, right? And we would have to get users to understand those complexities, right? So as time goes on, the work of the product designer, I think, is probably going to be more difficult, because when you look at Web 3, now we are Web 5. People are building Web 5 products now. And if you read some of the docs for those products, you realize it's a lot of abstract things, a lot of concepts, a lot of hypotheses that you need to deal with, that you might not have to deal with a lot of those complexities in Web 2 that we currently have, right? So what I'm seeing, that in the future, we are going to have to work on more complex things, and you'd have to rely a lot on your Web 2, Web 3 basics in order to meet the demands of the future product designer or the future products that will come. Same, I think, with every field. You'd have to upskill, otherwise you'll be left behind. And yeah,
what about the metaverse and VR and things like that?
At the end of the day, it's still human beings, right? So the experience you create, okay, so let's look at it as different languages. So English and then French. The experience that you create for a customer in English, you're not going to do an entirely different thing for the customer in French. It's just a shift in context. So the same thing with the metaverse. You are still going to have to deal with user psychology. You are still going to have to deal with user emotions. You are going to have to deal with feedback. You are going to deal with interaction design. It's just the context that will switch, right? So I don't think it's a huge jump. Just that you're going to be dealing with more realistic stuff. It's not like an app that I'll say, okay, the user will click here, click here, click here. In metaverse, you'd have to handle a lot more use cases, a lot more edge cases. That's okay, maybe somebody will be wearing the VR headsets and then fall down. How do you handle that edge case?
My goodness.
If somebody will be wearing the VR head and then they slap the person, how do you handle that edge case? Like, there are lots more edge cases to handle in VR, XR, AR, right? Than the normal UI that we do right now. So, like I say, it will get a lot more complex, but you just have to upskill, else you fall behind.
Benny, what do you think?
I agree with what Derek has said. The design industry is going to be more exciting, innovating, disruptive, and at the same time, it will get back to a place where we focus on humanity, where we first remember that we're humans and we're creating for humans. It's humans that are going to use this product. So whether you're creating for whatever metaverse or whatever universe, you need to realize that it's human beings that are going to use this. So again, I'm not just excited for the future of design, I'm excited for my future in design. You know, because I still see myself really diving into service design, you know, just that whole thing of how am I improving, you know, from people leaving their house and taking a walk on the street for 10 minutes, that interaction with people, with their building. I'm so interested in that, you know. So, yeah, and I feel like we'll get to a point where the importance of design can no longer be taken for granted, you know. So all the advocacy that we're doing now about why it's important to have designers in your team, we would have gone past that and will now be, you know, so solidified that we won't have five back end and one designer anymore. But yeah,
wow. Any final words, guys?
Final words sounds like you are going to die. I'll be like Terminator. I'll be back.
No, you see, that in itself, right, is product design. Like, you know exactly what I need to say, or the kind of reaction I'll get for what I'll say.
So yeah, I think product design is always growing. There's a common assertion that it's a crowded space, but I don't think it's crowded. There are designers who are charging $100,000 per project, and they are getting clients frequently, right? So you shouldn't think, if you want to get into product design, it's not crowded. If you do good work, work will find you. It's as easy as that. The only difficulty would be when you are starting out. That's the only difficult part. But then once you start with your first project, it might be a pet project. So when you start with your first project, second project, you realize that, yeah, now you are getting to understand the industry more. There are a lot of things that I still haven't figured out, but I'm assured that because of the way the industry is always growing, and I also want to learn, I always learn. So if you join the industry, just have the learning mindset. No one has everything figured out. There are some senior designers that still go and get inspiration from other websites. It's allowed. It's not a crime to go and get it. So someone said, steal somebody's design and then do iterations on it until nobody can come and blame you for stealing. So nobody brings design out of the blue. Everyone gets inspiration from somewhere. Once you understand that, the pressure to always bring something out of the world will reduce. And 50 or 60% of product design is systems, right? A system, like if your team has a design system, You don't need to conjure components from anywhere. You just go to the design system, copy and paste, and then create an experience, right? So the pressure of being creative is taken away at some point. I mean creative, not
creative.
Creating a design, but always going outside the scope of what you've been able to, you've been asked to do. Yeah. But you have fun. Yeah. Benny, that.
Benny. No, okay. Okay, so I will take this from a realistic point of view and zoom it down to our locality, Nigeria and Africa, right? So when I take interns and my students, what I always tell them is that the first day of class, when everybody comes in, I'm like, what have you heard about product design or about tech? And then half the time they say that there's money in it, that you make money in 6 months, in this week, in that week, you know. So yes, there's money to be made in tech, but that's right. So it's very important that you know that while you're coming, you're going to go through a process before that progress starts to show. Don't be so taken by, trust me, I'm very realistic when it comes to bills, you know, and asking for compensation that reflect your value, so that you focus on the important thing, which is building your skill first, passing through that process. If you're consistent, you're definitely going to progress. And as Derek said, when you do good work, projects will find you, right? So throw away that notion of you're going to come in 2 months and you're making 1 million. Try to be realistic, right? Secondly, your journey is uniquely yours. It's authentically yours. Derek and I we've all spoken during this recording, and while there's similarities that, you know, we both can relate, there are differences in our process. That's because his journey is very different from my journey. So if I leave mine and start focusing on his, obviously I'm going to get lost, right? So mentors, you're talking to people, you want to be able to pick and choose what is relevant to your own personal journey, what is relevant to your career goals, what is relevant to your career objective, and how that aligns to your own value as a person, right? Don't forget to have fun as well. I love work-life balance. I know on Twitter they say work 20 hours a day, work 21 or 20, in fact 25 hours a day. I don't advocate for that, right? Yes, you will make sacrifices, but not have to chill with your friends for months or for weeks.
Yeah,
but at the same time, you need to realize that you're human, you know. So that's what I have to add to. And be patient. Be patient. That international job will come. Happens. That remote role will come. Just be patient. Yes.
Wow. Wow. This was great. It was really awesome having you guys. UX Derek, Benny McCarthy. This was a wonderful experience. Getting to know more about what both of you do.
Pun intended.
Yeah, I really enjoyed recording this episode with the both of you. Unfortunately, we have to end. It was nice having you both here on Late for Stand-Up. Unfortunately, Barnabas couldn't make it, but I still think this was an awesome episode. We'll be right back. much appreciation goes to Chima. We recorded this episode in his studio. Really awesome having us here, and hope he was really helpful to making this episode very successful. Yeah, so what next?
Thank you.
Yeah, but it was nice having you guys.
Thank you for having me.
I'm sure the both of you are going to catch up.
Yeah. Only we follow each other on Twitter, but as I said, I'm a passive Twitter user, so I operate more in the... Yes, we do. No, yeah, I will probably...
Okay.
I'll send you a DM. All
right, good.
So
we went for an event.
I really had fun.
We went for an event last week. People were coming up to me like, you follow me, and I'm like, please tell me your handle, because I really don't remember.
Late for stand up. Benny, I'll call you.
No problem. Bye. Bye, Derek.
Bye.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye, Chima, and hope.